Continuing. And again, as Marx and Engels observed in part one of the Communist Manifesto, quote, that union to attain which the burghers of the Middle Ages with their miserable highways required centuries, the modern proletarians, thanks to railways, achieve in a few years, unquote. The metaphor, they say, of railways seems to be given more weight than it can bear. But the general point is as clear as it is central to the way they conceive of class struggle as class forming. The means the bourgeoisie successively expand in order to form and integrate discrete labor processes, both the technical and the social divisions of labor, thereby bring into relation as well the laborers whose activities are being interrelated. Beyond the essentially administrative deployment of electronic means of communication is the capitalization of it as an historically increasing component of ordinary well-being, a process increasingly in direct conflict, not necessarily contradiction, with efforts by governments in virtue of the workings of the interstate system to define and filter for those territorially subject to their rule what is and is not information, entertainment, commentary, and so on. Just as one direction of electronification as world historical process bears integrally on the central class forming process by integrating the technical divisions of labor, so the other remarked on here bears integrally on popular consciousness of conditions of existence, of what is and is not tolerable, of what is and is not desirable, and hence on the abstruse matters of necessary labor and relative surplus value. And my interjection, I think we can now see at this point in our reading of anti-systemic movements, that this whole matter of necessary labor and relative surplus value is about power fine-tuning its control of us, conditioning what is and is not desirable, what is and is not tolerable. These terms, necessary labor and relative surplus value, refer to the fact that in Marxist theory, capital is ever about driving down the price of the commodity, quote unquote, labor power by forcing us to accept less and less in the way of our quality of life. Today we call this austerity, the way it is today affected in policy is called austerity. That is, by reducing as much as possible what it is necessary for us to have, what we must have, in order to keep getting up and going back to them. And this is also what I'm hoping people think and see when we talk about the panopticon, having to hold, being about holding our eyes. The job does this really, really well. And as we move more into this transitional period globally, in which globally there is an inability to for power to employ this mechanism called the coerced work system to hold our eyes, keep us occupied. You can imagine that they are strenuously attempting to figure out what will hold our eyes. I think we should be concerned about their intentions for us, and mostly that we need to begin having some intentions for ourselves. That this is about sheer naked. And by the way, I mean, those of you listening who, you know, when you're free of the, when you're not at work and you happen to go into a setting like a bank is a good example, because you're standing there waiting in line, if you're still going to the teller, and look around and see the intensity with which people are focused on their machines. That provides a really good illustration of what I mean by hold our eyes. And think in those moments of the poems that we just heard from Walt Whitman about the depth and complexity of what is the human, the soul. Consider the waste expressed in what you're seeing before you then. And you'll get a sense of the moral rationale for moving on beyond any other rationale for us moving on to our freedom. It's simply wrong for any human being to not be able to develop their soul. That is what we're here for.